Thanks, Sebastian. So it's a pleasure, as always, to be back at Perimeter Institute. I'm going to talk about the causal set approach to quantum gravity. And I'm not going to give you too many formal definitions or precise results. I'm going to speak more in terms of examples and pictures. So the causal set approach to quantum gravity is a discrete approach in which space-time is conjectured to be fundamentally discrete or atomic and is modeled by a causal set. So a causal set you should think of as a discrete space-time. So here's the plan of my talk. I don't know how far I'll get through this. Usually with a blackboard talk, one roughly gets through probably about a quarter to a third of your plan. So hopefully I'll get to the actual new stuff that I want to tell you about, which is point four. But we'll see how we go. So first I want to give you a general claim that in causal set theory, the right analog of general covariance is label invariance. And you'll see that that idea feels right, it smells right, and I'll give you a reason why we think that that's the right conception of general covariance. I'll then say very little, but just note that in causal set quantum gravity, we think of quantum theory in general, so not just for causal sets, but in general, in terms of the path integral. Path integral quantum mechanics is conceived of as a generalized stochastic process. Rather than being a generalization of classical mechanics, path integral quantum mechanics is conceived of as being a generalized stochastic process. And I'll then mention that there are two ways to think about a stochastic process in general, one in which to which I've attached the word block or block universe, and the other way of thinking about it, I've attached the phrase growing block, and you'll see what I mean when I come to that point. And in this talk, I'm going to... So there are these two things, as a fork in the road, depending on... you can go either way in thinking about quantum causal set, and you can make progress in either direction, and progress is being made in both directions. So I'll just mention some people involved in this way of thinking about quantum causal sets. But for this talk, we're going to take this fork in the road and see how far we can get with thinking about causal set dynamics as a stochastic process in which things actually happen. And then the first and most, to date, most important piece of progress made in this direction of thinking about causal set dynamics was made by Raphael and David Rideout. I'll describe what those dynamical models are. They're called classical sequential growth models for causal sets. They are classical, so they're not yet quantum. And I'll show you that they, in fact, refer to, in their definition, to labels of the causal set. So they don't quite conform to the hope that we have that causal sets could be fully generally covariant or fully label invariant. Maybe that's not a problem. For example, we use coordinates perfectly happily in general relativity, even though when we come to make physical statements, we have to purge our language of any reference to the coordinates. Nevertheless, it's totally fine to use coordinates, just so long as you don't refer to them when you're making physical statements. So maybe that's totally fine, but the question arises, can we think about causal set dynamics, in particular, causal set dynamics in which the causal set grows by a dynamical process of growth, in a way that doesn't refer to labels at all? And the progress that I want to tell you about is that we have constructed a framework in which we can think about these dynamical models for causal sets, growing in a way that doesn't refer to any labels. And this is work that I did with Nazarene, Imam Bakas, Amelia Owens, Raphael, and my PhD student, Stav Zalal, and we had a lot of fun doing it. And the framework that I'm going to tell you about is a particular partial order or a tree called, which we've dubbed Cov tree, Cov for covariant, and it's a tree, so Cov tree. And my students made me a card for Christmas with a picture of Christmas Cov tree on it, which, yeah, so we laughed a lot while thinking about Cov tree. Okay. It's only a framework. We haven't yet come up with any particular model that we can point to and say, yes, this is a model, which a dynamical model, which is particularly interesting and worth studying. So I'll mention some struggles that we are having that in order to do that, to define a particular model. Okay, so let's get going with one. So what do I mean by label invariants? Well, here's a causal set. It's a four-element causal set, so it's cardinality four. And let me just briefly say, a causal set is a graph directed or transitive and acyclic. So this is a causal set. Let me label the element 0, 1, 2, 3. So that it's cardinality 4. And the edges of this graph denote the relations between the elements of the causal set. So 0 precedes 2, 1 precedes 2, 1 precedes 3. 2 and 3 are unrelated. They don't precede either. Neither precedes the other. And the order, therefore, is denoted by the edges, but the direction is denoted by the position on the board. So the causal relation always goes upwards. So 0 precedes or is to the past of 2 because it's below it, just vertically on the blackboard. Okay, so that's a causal set, very simple one. Here's another one. One, zero, two, three. Here's another one. Zero, one, three, two. All right. Here's another one. Okay, zero, is it one, zero? Okay. All right. So those are four causal sets, and they're labeled in different ways, right? So here, three is the element which is above, which is maximal, and it's only above one element. And here, this is different because the element labeled two is the one that's above only one element and is maximum. Okay. So there are four. But you can see that they all have the same order. So there's an order isomorphism between these four things.
Is the one on the left and right different from each other?
Did I not?
Zero. The middle line should be going the other way on the last one.
Did I not?
It looks like, I mean...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay.
That one. Yes. Thank you. Yep. Okay. So what I'm going to do is make an equivalence class of these four labeled things. And I'm going to draw it as an unlabeled causal set like this. Okay. And it's going to be convenient for me to call this an object like this, which is an unlabeled causal set with four elements, a four order. So this is a four order. It's just for convenience, instead of having to say causal set with four elements unlabeled. Right, so just a four order. Now, for the purposes of this talk, I'm not going to refer to or include in the discussion labeled causal sets like this, 3, 0, 1, 2. Okay. So this is also a labeled causal set, but in this causal set, the element labeled 3 precedes the element labeled 1. And I'm going to disallow that sort of labeling. So whenever an element precedes another element, the label of the lower one, the preceding one, the one that happens first, must be smaller than the label of the one that happens after it. Okay, so I'm not allowing these labels. So no labels like these. Like this. Okay, so label invariance for causal sets is the statement that any physical statements that we make about the universe, our causal set universe, must pertain only to equivalence classes of causal sets and must not make any reference to any labels. Okay, so general covariance equals label invariance. Okay, that's just a sort of general heuristic. What does it mean in principle? I mean, in practice, what implications does this idea of label invariance have? Well, first of all, physical statements. Do not refer to labels. But there might be other consequences. We'll come to one in particular later on. So what else? Okay, so why is label invariance the right analog of general covariance in causal set theory, in the causal set approach to quantum gravity? Well, it smells right, okay? It labels are like coordinates. We know that one way to express general covariance in classical general relativity is that coordinates are unphysical. So it feels right, it smells right. But there's a deeper reason which goes to the heart of the central conjecture behind causal set quantum gravity, which is that the order relation and the number of causal set elements, so in other words, the cardinality of any particular causal set or subcausal set, are all that you need to recover in the continuum approximation a full Lorentzian continuum geometry. The reasons that conjecture is plausible, which I won't go into, but that is the central conjecture, that the order and the number are all that you need. You don't need any other kind of information. It doesn't matter what the causal set elements are. They could be natural numbers. They could be sets. Of course, natural numbers really are sets. Anyway, they could be anything at all. Doesn't matter. The concept of the causal set space-time atom is that it has no structure. It has no internal degrees of freedom. It has no labels on it that physically matter. That's the central conjecture. So this label invariance stems from this the central conjecture of causal set theory. Okay. So what's an example then of a physical statement that one might make about a causal set universe that doesn't refer to labels? And there's a particular set of very important examples of such statements. So let me tell you what they are. And to tell you what they are, I need to introduce a concept. And the concept is the concept of stem. So here's a causal set. This one is related to this. Okay. All right, so here's a causal set. A stem is a subcausal set of a causal set, which is finite. So this might be infinite, it might go on. A stem is a subcausal set, which is a past set, or you could think of it as a set that contains its own path. So, for example, this three-element subcausal set is a stem, because the past of every element in this subcausal set is also in it, right? So this element is the past of this one, and it is included in the set. Okay, so that's a subcausal set that is a past set. this causal set, subcausal set, is not a stem, because, for example, this element is to the past of this one in the set, and it's not in the set itself. So that's not a stem. So non-stems will be yellow, stems will be purple. So here's another stem. Here's another, this is another non-stem. Right, that's not a stem because this element is in the past of this, but it's not contained in the yellow set. Okay. So there's a notion of stem. An N order can be a stem of some causal set or not. Okay, so there's a statement that one can make about, so here's a, here, let's say this, our favorite example, this four order. We can say this is a stem of the causal set universe. That's a label invariant statement. Doesn't depend on any labels that you might have put on your causal set in order to be able to work with it or talk about it. So it's a statement which is covariant. It's a covariant statement. So it's either true of a causal set or it's not true of a causal set. So here's a causal.
The causal universe. The causal universe.
Yes.
What is it?
The space time, and that's underlying this is that we're talking about a cosmological model of the universe in which the universe is a causal set.
Is there a causal space time we live in?
Causal set, yeah.
I guess I'm concerned about what they mean. They means, I guess, the particular causal universe that we live in. Is that what you?
Yes, you could think, yeah, I could think, yeah. So that, in fact, when we come to these growth models, that will be exactly what these statements mean. It's either true of the universe that is growing or it's not true of the universe that is growing. So let's have a look at this. So it is this particular causal set. This is not a stem of it. It might look as if it is. So, for example, if I take this element, these four green elements, but that subcausal set looks like that. But it's not a stem because this green element is in there, but this one, which is to the past of the green one, is not included. So this is false. This statement is false for this particular causal set universe that I've grown. But if I draw a causal set universe like this, something like that, then this is a stem. So this statement would be true of this causal set. Okay. So given any causal set, I can ask whether this stem statement is true or not true, true or false. Another way to describe a statement like this is to say that it's an event. This event, when you think about a particular causal set model of the universe, either happens or it doesn't happen. So it's either the case that this causal set here is a stem of the universe, or it's not the case. It doesn't happen that this causal set is a stem of the causal set universe that's growing. Okay. So are there any questions about stems and stem questions? So for this particular question, the answer here is no. And for this particular one, the answer to this question is yes, it is. All right, so that's this. Okay, so I'm just very briefly going to repeat what I said in the introduction, that we conceive of quantum mechanics from a path integral perspective as a generalized stochastic process. So in other words, quantum mechanics, such as ordinary quantum mechanics, is a generalization of Brownian motion and not a generalization of classical mechanics. So that's the overall perspective or a position that we are taking on quantum mechanics in general, and for causal sets in particular. And when in mathematics, mathematical studies of stochastic processes, there are two ways to think about a stochastic process. One way, so this is two now, so that was one, this is two. So you can think of a stochastic process as in A, position A, is that a stochastic process is a measure space. There is a set of histories for your system. There is a sigma algebra of measurable sets, another measurable subsets of your sample space, and a measure mu, such that every element of your sigma algebra of events has a non-negative measure, and the measure of the whole of your sample space is one. It's normalized to be one. Okay, so that's one way of thinking. Let me shift up this here. Where am I going? Measurable sets measure. Okay, that's one way. And then version B is that a stochastic process is actually a process. It's a process in which things happen. And the typical example of that is just a random walk. So the walker, so in the random walk, you have a walker, and the walker steps to the left or the right with certain transition probabilities, transitions between the state of the walker at one time and the state of the walker the next time, and the state of the walker the next time, and the state of the walker the next time. So you give the process as a sequence of transitions, and the process is defined by the transition probabilities. So we have transitions from one state to another state, with transition probabilities. Now, if you give a stochastic process like this, there are standard results in measure theory which guarantee that you can derive from it a measure space. So they're not just two different things that don't talk to each other. If you have these transition probabilities, you can derive the sample space in that case is just, for example, in the case of the random walk, they're just all the paths that the walker can take. And from the transition probabilities, you can derive this, the measure and the collection of measurable sets. Okay. All right. So there are two, but they're sort of conceptually different. This I would call a block universe way of thinking about a stochastic process. There's just all these histories, once and for all, in this sample space, and you're just picking one at random. But it's the whole history of the system, from the very beginning of time, if it had a beginning, to the end of time, it has an end. And they're all here, and you just pick one at random according to this measure. That's this sort of measure theory blocky way of thinking. Whereas the transition process, the process way of thinking, is that there actually is a process, and this there are things which are actually happening. All right, so there are these two perspectives you can take on causal set quantum gravity and make progress. And progress in this direction is being pioneered by Sumati Surya, who is an Emunetor fellow here at Perimeter Institute, and collaborators like Will Cunningham, and David Rideout is one of the early pioneers also. And here you, roughly speaking, consider your space of histories, in other words, causal sets. You, by hook or by crook, come up with some weights for those causal sets. And yes?
Would it be more physical to say that, I mean, the histories are basically a series of measurements rather than, I guess, causal sets? Because causal sets themselves are not actually observable.
Okay, I want to take a materialistic and not operational perspective on things. So I don't want to talk about observables and observers and external measuring devices or anything. So, yeah.
But I mean, this would, I mean, you would think that that would come to conflict with quantum mechanics at some point, because, I mean, quantum mechanics, not everything that would. You cannot measure everything in your configuration of space simultaneously. Can you? But I don't know. But maybe you can. But I mean, that's a big assumption.
Right. So there's the interpretation of a quantum theory in this path integral framework is work in progress. So I can't. But, yeah. So I'm not going to talk about that whole area. So yeah, and most of what I'm going to say is going to be classical anyway. Okay, so
But trying to describe quantum processes through measure spaces usually yields to leads to problems regarding the Boolean logic of the theory, right? We use commutative probability to describe classical physics.
Yes, absolutely. How to interpret this is big. Yeah, that's a whole other area of research going on in causal set theory or inspired by causal set theory, and I'm not going to talk about it in this talk, but happy to discuss that later. Yeah.
So these transitions happen in time?
Ah. Yeah, hold that thought. Right, so there is this work being done, pioneered by Sumati Will, in which they are trying to calculate the measure on a particular sample space of causal sets. Okay. But there's also work in this direction where we take seriously this idea that the dynamics of the causal set is a process of transitions. But the question is, of course, transitions from what to what? And it was Raphael and David Rideout who made particular progress in this direction by answering the question, transitions from what to what? So the transitions that David and Raphael built their family of models called classical sequential growth models for causal sets on are transitions from an n-element causal set to an n plus 1-element causal set, in which for each transition, a new element is, so you have your n plus 1 causal set, element causal set, n-element causal set, a new causal set element is born, it comes into being, and it comes into being with a certain set of relations to the causal set elements that already exist. Okay. So this leads to Rideout and Sorkin's sequential growth models. And each dynamical process is a sequence of transitions from starting with the empty set to a causal set with one more causal set element in a way that I'm going to illustrate in a minute. So transitions, so it's a sequence of transitions from an n element core set to an n plus 1 element core set. Okay, so this is 3 now. Let me describe that in a little more detail. So I'm going to draw a structure, it's a tree, it's another partial order, called POSCAL, which is short for the poset of causal sets, right? And it's a tree. It's an ordered tree, and again, the order proceeds up the board. And the tree is formed of a sequence of levels, countable set of levels, in the following way. Okay, so the first level is just the single element causal set. And there's only one way to label the single element causal set, and that's, I'm going to label it with the number zero. So that's the root of this tree called POSCAL. Above this, there are all the...
What is it called?
POSCAL. Poset of causal sets.
Okay.
The partially ordered set of causal sets. It's a particular flavor of POSCAL, let me say. But anyway, let's just call it POSCAL. Okay. All right, so this can transition to a two-element causal set. And there are only two-element unlabeled causal sets, and that's what's called the chain, which is two elements, one above the other, and the anti-chain, which are two elements which are not related. And it turns out that each of those has only one labeling. So there's only two things in level two of POSCAL. One is this one, 0, 1. And the other is this one, 0, 1. Okay. So you start here, and you transition to here or here with certain probabilities, P or Q. And P plus Q is 1. Okay. So just... The idea is that we're going to go on a random walk up POSCAL. Okay. Now this, suppose we're here now. There are, it turns out, which way? There are four things that you can transition to. So we have to start with 0, 1 and add a new element labeled 2 any way that we can to make a new labeled causal set. So we have 0, 1, and then 2 could be unrelated. One thing that can happen. Then another transition would be 0, 1, and 2 happens above both of them. Another one is 0, 1, and 2 is above 0 but not above 1. It's another thing that can happen. And then the fourth thing that can happen is you have 0 and 1 and 2 is there. Okay, all right. So four things that you can transition to if you're here. And again, there's a set of probabilities here which all add up to 1. If we're here, then let me draw it down here a bit smaller. 0 and 1. Then there are three things that this can transition to. There's 0, 1, 2 can be over here. 0, 1, and 2 can be here. And then the 0, 1, 2, where 2 is above both 0 and 1. So there are three possible transitions that can happen here. And again, there's probabilities that add up to 1 here. And you just keep going. You add a new element every time. So there'll be, so this is level. Level 2, this is level 1, 2, this is level 3. Level 4 is all the things that these things can transition to by adding a new element, which will be labeled 3, any way you can above these. Yes?
What's the significance of using the labels now? Like, what's the difference between the third and the fourth in the top?
Good. Yeah. Okay. So, for now, if I just talk about a general random walk up this, so this is now everything will have things above it. For example, above here, there'll be 0, 1, 2, 3. That will be a node that this can transition to other things. Right, so this is an infinite tree, and I can just define a random walk on it. Now, the class of those things is so vast to be totally uninteresting. You pick a random walk, it's unlikely to have anything to do with physics at all, right? So What David and Raphael did was they said, well, let's put some physically motivated conditions on this random walk so that we have some chance of it being physically interesting and giving us, you know, something to talk about, something to investigate that's worth investigating. So they used what you've noticed, that some of these causal sets here at level three are different labelings of the same order, of the same three order. In particular, this one, and this one are all the same. They're all the same order, just differently labeled. Right? So David and Raphael made the condition that the probability of arriving here should equal the probability of arriving here. That means that, which equals the probability of arriving here. So it means that the product of this transition probability and that one should equal the product of this transition probability and that one, that transition probability. And they call that condition discrete general covariance. So random walks up Poskow, too many to be interesting. So Rideout and Sorkin imposed conditions. One, what something they called discrete, the condition I just said is called, they called it discrete general covariance. And here we come to this thing here, right? So I said general covariance is label invariance. And one way to interpret that is that everything we say, physical statements about the causal set universe must not refer to labels. Right? What else? What other things might there be in the theory that we would call general covariance? So here's one, and this is an extra condition on dynamics for growing causal sets. So discrete general covariance is that the probability of arriving at a node doesn't depend on the labeling. On the label. So that's a discrete, that's a sort of general covariance condition, but it's not prescribed by saying that physical statements should be independent labels. Okay. So the second condition is a causality condition, which I'm gonna tell you about only if I have time at the end. So causality. Okay. So there's another condition on these transition probabilities. Okay. And together, these two conditions restrict the set of possible random walks up Poskow to an interesting class, a class that's small enough and interesting enough to be worth studying. And there are lots of interesting things to say about this particular class of models, which are called classical sequential growth models, or CSG models. So CSG models satisfy these conditions. They're random walks up Poskow, and they satisfy discrete general covariance and this causality condition.
So more generally, why don't you consider processes that can go forwards and backwards up the stream?
Never been able to make any headway with those, but we have tried. Run into all sorts of difficult problems. In particular, how do you implement a causality condition if things are happening to the future and the past? Yeah. But yeah, we've tried. But it's hard. It's hard to make sense of it. Yeah.
So would you comment on, it seems by only allowing future growth, it seems you introduce global time in the sense that the basic conjecture of the program is that the order and the number give you everything about space-time. Is this an external input or is it part of the original?
Good. So two things to pick apart there. So one is that you're only allowing growth to the future. I consider that to be a good thing because, as far as I'm concerned, the past and the future are different. The past has happened and the future hasn't happened. And this this accords with that subjective experience that I have about the passage of time. So that's one thing. The second thing is that you perhaps are referring to the fact that the whole definition of this model depends on this labeling, right? So things are happening in this parameter, which is this level or stage parameter, right? So that but that, as you rightly said, that shouldn't be physical. The only thing that's physical is the order relations of the causal set that you're growing, not what particular order they happen to have been produced in this process, right? So I'm going to address that question now. Okay. Right. So.
Another
question. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Is this a physical evolution or just a mathematical evolution? Is that evolution operator that acts on an element causal set and is it an element causal set? Some energy is involved?
No. No to all of those things that you said. So, yeah. Yes. So this parameter, which is this label, this natural number, is unphysical. Some of that information is unphysical. The only physical information that you have is the actual order relations of the causal set that is growing. Right? So I'm coming to that now. So yeah. So this is not, this label is not a time label, if you like. It's not physical time. It's just an internal parameter. It's a gauge degree of freedom, if you like. Well, some of it's a gauge degree of freedom. Okay, so now, given I said that that this vision, this conception of a stochastic process, allows you via fundamental theorems in measure theory to construct this measure space. Okay, so that's exactly what we have here. We have a stochastic process in which there are transitions from one state to another state, and from it we can construct these mathematical objects. So all of this stuff gives us all this, the transition probability, this structure, the transition probability, gives us a measure space. Okay, I'm going to call it omega tilde, A tilde, and mu. Okay. What is omega tilde? It's the set of histories, the set of paths. So it's the set of infinite paths up through Pascal. Those are the histories. Each infinite path up through Pascal corresponds to one and only one labeled infinite causal set. Right? So you think you just carry on. What you're doing is building a labeled causal set. And the one that you get in the end, if you have an infinite path, that's an element of omega tilde. So your sample space for this process is labeled infinite causal sets. There is a sigma algebra of measurable sets, which you can construct from the transition probabilities and measure on these events in the sigma algebra. Okay. But many of those events are not covariant. Now, what do I mean by a covariant event? So an event, a measurable set, let me call it E, which is an element, it's a measurable set, is covariant. It's covariant if one labeled causal set is in E, all the relabelings of that causal set, all the other labelings of it, is also in E, are also in E. Right? So if gamma in E implies all other labelings of gamma are also in E. Okay. So if that's true of a measurable set, then we call it covariant. It means that the statement that you're making about the causal set doesn't depend on labelings, because all of the labelings of a particular causal set are either in it, or all of the labelings are not in it, right? So a measurable set is covariant if either all labelings of a causal set are in it, or all labelings of a causal set are not in it.
Can you give an example, like in the top board of something that's covariant or?
Yes. So a stem event is a covariant event. So stem as in this thing here, okay? So here's, I'm gonna define stem of this. And I can define a stem event for any n order, right? Any finite order I can define. So it's equal to all the labeled causal sets in here, such that this is a stem of gamma, right? So I take my labeled causal set and I look to see whether this is a stem of it or not. If it is, I put it in this set, and if it's not, then I don't put it in. So this is covariant.
So something that's slightly confusing means that
this
gamma, this omega tilde,
was
supposed to be a set of histories, but now you're talking about elements with being labeled causal sets. So when you say it's not, this gamma is element of that, you mean like the future evolution of gamma as well?
Yes. So this is a completed labeled causal set. It's an infinite labeled causal set.
The downward closure of gamma, or something. Like you complete it with like all its future.
So an element of an element of omega tilde is an infinite causal set, countable causal set, labeled by all the natural numbers. Right? Yes. So it can't be completed anymore. I mean, it's in itself complete. I mean, it's countable and it has all the natural numbers as its label.
This all seems very discrete. Isn't the simple algebra like just gonna be the power set of all?
If we were talking about a finite universe, then the sigma algebra would be the power set. But when you have infinite stochastic processes, then the measurable sets are not. The set of measurable sets, not the full power set. So only some of the subsets of omega are measurable. Some of them are not measurable. Standard in for infinite stochastic processes. Okay.
Does the collection of covariant sets itself form a sigma algebra?
Yes, it does. That's right. So I now define A without a tilde to be the sub sigma algebra of covariant events. Yeah. Okay. Good. And that's the physical algebra. We don't care about the unphysical events. Just ignore them. They're measurable. They have a measure, but they're physically uninterpretable. So we have this sub-sigma algebra on which mu restrict of all the covariant events. Okay. So then there's a theorem, which is that FAP, which is a technical term that means for all practical purposes, the covariant algebra is equal to something I'll call AS, and that is the sigma algebra that's generated by the stem sets. So if I take these sets for every finite order, all of them, and I generate a sigma algebra from them, that's this sigma algebra, AS. And you can prove that for all practical purposes, I'll say what I mean by for all practical purposes, the covariant algebra is this stem algebra for any CSG model. So it's not true for any general random walk up Poiskau. It's only true for the CSG models, the ones that satisfy discrete general covariance and Bell causality. So what I mean by FAP is that if I take any element of the covariant algebra, I can find an element of the stem algebra that differs from it. In other words, the symmetric difference of those two events is of measure zero. So, you know, that for practical purposes, you can interpret every covariant event as a logical combination of stem statements. So the stem statements for CSG models exhaust all the physical statements that you can make. So if you make a set of statements about your causal set universe, it has this stem but not that stem, then a whole bunch of those, then that's all you can say about a causal set universe in CSG models. Okay. All right, how am I doing? Oh, great. That, okay. Now, you may have noticed that so now we've got to a position where we've got a sigma algebra of covariant statements. We can interpret them physically in terms of stem statements about the causal set. And so we're done. We started with labeled stuff, but we've purged ourselves of the labels. Now we're talking only about these covariant events, stem events. And we have, in principle, if not in practice, we have a measure on the... So the measure will give you probabilistic answers to questions like, does the universe have this stem? And there will be a probability. The measure will furnish a probability for that event. Okay. But there's still this sort of lingering feeling that, well, it's a bit too labely because we defined the process in terms of these transition probabilities. When you see the actual so in CSG models, they're actually concrete formulae for those transition probabilities, depending on what these transitions actually are. And the condition of discrete general covariance is also labely, because you're saying that at stage three, the probability that you arrive here is equal to the probability that you arrive here, is equal to the probability that you arrive here at stage three. But the notion of stage is a gauge piece of information, because the stage has no meaning in the final covariant algebra. So the sort of labels are there lurking in the background. Can we do better? Or can we do, well, I don't know whether it'll be better, but can we define a growth-like process in which a causal set is getting bigger, which doesn't refer to labels? And the answer is we have a framework for talking about that now called CovTree. And I'm just going to, I think, have time to draw you CovTree. That's all I'm going to do. Be able to do, I think.
You can push the button one up if you want. Is that
sorry.
Board?
Oh, there's another board.
Behind this one.
Ah, then it hides this one.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Another one here.
Do you want me to push this one up? Okay. So, CovTree is another infinite tree, like Poiskau is an infinite tree, on which the dynamics is conceived of as a random walk, upwards, an upwards random walk. But now each node of CovTree is itself a covariant event, or corresponds to a covariant event. So let me draw you the first, some of the first three levels of Coventry. Okay. So it starts, and it's covariant, so there'll be no labels now. So it starts at the same root, just the single element causal set. It can, it will then transition to now three possibilities. Okay. And those possibilities are a set containing the anti-chain. So that's just, that's one causal set. It's the two element, the two order, which is the anti-chain. Or the set containing the two chain, or the set that contains them both. So it's that, and then I'm going to put a comma in between. So this is a set of cardinality two, this is a set of cardinality one, that's a set of cardinality one. Okay. What does that mean? Okay, so this is level, so this is Coventry. It's again an infinite tree with a single root. This is level one, this is level two, right? So what this node in Coventry corresponds to is that the two stems of the causal set that is growing, there's only one two stem, and that is the two anti-chain. This node corresponds to the event, which is that the two-step, the causal set that's growing only has one two-stem, and that's the two-chain. This node corresponds to the causal set that's growing has both the two-chain and the two-anti-chain as stems. Okay, so let me give you examples of what, so examples. So if I grow a causal set like this, which is just an infinite chain on top of an two anti-chain, right? So that carries on forever, and that's my causal set. The only two stem that has is the two anti-chain, right? So that's, if I ask, is this event, does this event happen, and my universe is this, my answer would be yes. Okay. It does not have the two anti-chain, the two chain as a stem. So this is not, the answer to this question is for this universe is no, right? But here's a universe that for which the answer to that, that's just a two, so this one corresponds to this, right? So the only two stem of the infinite chain is this one, right? And this corresponds to a universe in which both the two chain and the two anti-chain of stems, and pretty much everything else is, so I can draw this with just with a single, so I draw the chain and just add a single disconnected element like that. Right. So something like this has both the chain and the two anti-chain as stems. Okay. And if you think about it a bit, for any causal set, either it has just the two anti-chain as a stem, as a two stem, or it has just only the two chain as the two stem, or it has both two stems. Right, that's it. So you've got, so for every possible universe you can grow, either this corresponds to its two stems, or this corresponds to its two stems, or this corresponds to its two stems. And you just carry on like that. So level three is the nodes are sets of three orders, and each set of three orders corresponds to the statement, the three stems of the causal set universe are these particular three orders, right? So I can draw all of the nodes above here. The nodes above here are this, and the set that contains both the three anti-chain and what we call the lambda. So these are three orders, Right. I can also draw all the, there are three nodes above this one, which are the three chain, the V, and, so that's another thing it transitions to, and the set that contains both of them. Okay. And then the things that can be above this node are all the sets of three orders which have both the two anti-chain and the two chain as two stems. And there are 22 of them, so I'm not going to draw them. But I'll just draw one of them. So above here, you have the singleton node. It just contains the single three order, which is something we call the L. So it's a three order which consists of just a two chain union, a disconnected unit, disconnected element, and then there are another 21 above here. So it's a whole bunch of other chains. Okay. So again, arriving at a particular node here at level three, this corresponds to the event, which is the causal set that's growing has these as its three stems, and only these. So if you arrive here, then you know that the causal set that you're growing does not have the three chain as a stem.
Is there any particular reason why I choose to use sets rather than multisets? Or have you thought about that?
Say that again.
So why are you counting, you're not counting these stems with multiplicity? And is there any particular reason why you're only caring about whether this stem is, or whether this order is a stem, and not like how many of them are there?
Yes, because that information is included in the information about stems of higher cardinality in the end. So the stems are exhaustive in some way. So if you say, yes, I will come to a close, thank you. So, so you keep going. So it's again an infinite tree, and we conceive of the dynamics as being a random walk up Cov tree. Now, arriving at a particular node in Cov tree is the occurrence of the event, which is these are the n stems of the growing causal set. You can again complete, and you have transition probabilities on all of these links in Cov tree, and it defines a random walk. The random walk will again give you a measure, or give you the measure space, and now A and mu. What is omega now? Well, just because you have a random walk up this tree, of course, the histories, the paths, the elements of your sample space, they are just infinite paths in Cov tree, and it's a theorem that every infinite path in Cov tree corresponds to at least one unlabeled causal set. It's not obvious. It's a theorem. You have to prove. You have to prove it. But every infinite path in Cov tree corresponds. It's not a one-to-one correspondence, but it corresponds to at least one path. One infinite course order. Okay, and that relates this to omega tilde of the original of the random walk up Posca. Okay, I haven't had a chance to say anything about these, but I'm happy to answer questions in the question time. So, thank you for your attention.
More questions. the fact that these stem statements are somehow the only thing that you have. You know, like every proposition you can make about the probability of having a certain collection of causal cosets describing the universe amounts to some statement about the stems.
Yes.
Can you maybe give some intuition on why?
I can talk around it. Okay, so you may have noticed that this whole setup is all about causal sets, which are what we call past finite. So the very fact that you have stems at all depends on the fact that the causal set isn't infinite into the past, because then your past sets would then be infinite, and you don't have any stems at all, right? So that's one thing about stems. They only make sense in a universe which is past finite. So where you have to decide whether that's good or bad, right? So it seems to us, after playing with things for quite a while, that if you allow things to be infinite into the past, so stem questions are somehow tied to being past finite. So if you allow things to be infinite into the past, which is something that you open the door to if you allow the growth to be, to the future and to the past, then you get into the terrain of what we of something that Raphael and I have been thinking about quite a lot recently, which is these 0-1 laws, which is somehow that anything that can happen will happen with probability 1, and the only way something doesn't happen is if it has probability 0. So you have some universe which is, which is infinite into the past and the future. It's very difficult to come up with covariant statements about such an infinite past and future infinite universe that isn't trivial in some sense. That if the universe has been going for infinite and an infinite amount of time. It's where do you locate yourself in the universe? And once you are not sure where to locate yourself, then it seems that anything that can happen either happens with probability 1 I think it's a sort of practical sort of pragmatic thing. We haven't been able to come up with any other way of talking about covariant, make physical covariant statements about a causal set which are not stem questions. I can't really throw much light onto it beyond that, unless Raphael has any.
I was just thinking that the stem question is really a natural question, because if you think of us now, we have access, in some generalized sense of access, we have access only to our past or to a certain finite region of the universe, assuming it had a beginning, as Faye is saying. And if you could give a complete description of that past, you would be describing a stem, right, a finite causal set. And what we would know is that the full universe that we live in possesses that stem, so that stem event happened. So in some sense, I think I would claim these are the natural questions to ask. And one might say that, as you probably are familiar with, in some approaches to quantum gravity, there's something called the problem of time. One aspect of the problem of time is it's not very easy to make generally covariant, to find quote-unquote observables, which are generally covariant. It's an interesting consequence of this theorem, that FAP theorem that Faye mentioned, that at least in this classical context, we're not yet talking about quantum gravity, but in this classical context, this problem of time is resolved, or let's say it's not there. Or the resolution is, it's partly not there because you have the whole causal set, space-time, not just data on a hypersurface. And then it's not there in a more complete sense because you can identify the observables with meaningful physical statements, not just some mathematical abstract thing while they commute with the constraints or something, but you have a meaning, you can say what the meaning of the term means. And it's that the real world has this step. That helps.
Yeah.
Seth.
Yeah, so is each element in the prop tree, does it correspond to like an infinite tower of classical creation?
Ah. Yes, yeah, so good. What's the relationship between classical sequential growth and good? Okay, so each classical sequential growth model gives us a probability for each covariant event via this sequence of things, blah, blah, blah. So a CSG model gives us this probability or measure mu of a covariant event. And each of these elements of CovTree is a covariant event. So a CSG model gives us a probability for each of these nodes. And in that sense, a CSG model can be recast into the CovTree language in a sort of, it's a roundabout way, but so now I have a probability of this in CSG, and I have a probability of this in CSG. So my transition probability is just this probability divided by that one. So it's a, you know, it's a hokey way of constructing a, you know, a random walk-up CovTree, but I can do it. For a CSG model, I can construct, in principle, if not in practice, all of these transition probabilities. So on CovTree, there will be some random walk which corresponds, gives, which you know, is the same as a CSG model. But the question here, right, so CSG models are special, they're a subclass of possible random walks on POSCAL. What conditions on these transition probabilities, just talking about CovTree now, not talking about discrete general covariance, which refers to labels and blah, blah. What conditions on these transition probabilities on CovTree will mean that we're guaranteed that this dynamics is the same as a CSG model? We don't know. That's all these unknowns now, that we don't know how to restrict the dynamics on CovTree to some subclass of random walks which are physically interesting. One specific question is, what conditions on these transition probabilities will guarantee that we've got a CSG measure? We don't know. But.
Mark's question before. You said that if you have infinite paths, then you have a problem. So what's the problem with infinite steps?
The definition of stem is that they're finite, so there's that. But you just mean, so past sets, infinite past sets. Well, there are too many of them. So, you know, that an infinite past, so now you're talking about the class of all, you know, they're all causal sets, so any causal set any infinite causal set could be a past set. There are uncountably many of them. And so the idea of making, you know, from them constructing some,
Okay.
I don't think there's a problem in principle, but it's just a practical problem that we have, which we've not been able to make any progress with such things.
In
so.
Principle,
there is a problem. Last question. So how do we characterize the physical state of this theory?
The physical state is a growing causal set. So it's not a state at a moment of time, because there's no, I mean, it's a four-dimensional thing, right? So it's a whole space-time, but it is not fixed, it's growing. but it's also not objective. So that in the conception of a growing causal set, of a growth model for causal sets, there's no notion of the universe that you can sort of take a snapshot of it and say, this is the universe now, because that would be a non-covariant statement, because there is no global now, right? So all you can do is say what the state of the universe is at a particular, for a particular, let's say, a particular causal set element, right? Its causal past is the state of the universe as far as it's concerned. So the notion of the state of the universe, A, is a fully four-dimensional thing. So it's not, you know, that there's some three-dimensional state. So it's a fully four-dimensional thing. And it's subjective. And the subject is where you're located in the causal set. So there's no God's eye view of the world in a growing causal set model. There are as many states of the universe as there are positions in the causal set.
Can I make a short comment?
Okay. It's short.
It's short, yeah. You might have been... I'll try.
I'll also do that.
You might have been asking a technical question, because Faye described in the earlier model with the labeled causal set, it's a transition from one state to another. In that technical sense, the state is just one of these nodes in poetry. And it describes in some sense, like if you're at level three, that's a kind of proxy for time. So it's kind of what happened at time three, not any particular person's time three. So I mean, to say more is difficult, especially it's a short station. But in technical sense, one could say a state is a node in that tree, in the same sense that state was a labeled stem in the postcard description.
For example, can we construct a set of operators of the rules of the theory that acts in the state space? What is a vacuum?
I don't know if we're allowed to answer that question.
What's a vacuum, for example? I mean,
let's just say that we close the seminar here,
because
for longer answers and for longer things in space around for one more week, but let us thank her for a nice talk again.